Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, I'll be your host today for Juneau Afternoon, and we have an exciting lineup of guests today. Some folks are coming down from UAS to tell us about summer classes and enrollment day, which is coming up on the 16th of May, I believe. We'll get a preview of tonight's Juneau Jazz and Classics, because Little Ed and the Blues Imperials are going to rock this studio. I don't know if they're bringing their instruments or not, but maybe we can get them to sing or something. We'll get details on the puppet workshop that's coming up at the library, and also, I believe, downtown at Alaska Robotics. The Leica crew is in town, almost Academy Award winners. KJ Metcalf will come in to talk about Monday's community discussion on restorative justice and criminalizing disabilities to be held at Northern Lights United Church. So, Juneau Afternoon. We'll have all of those guests for you right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders and representatives of Oregon's 9 federally recognized tribes gathered at the state capitol in Salem this week for Tribal Nations Day. KWSO's William Robbins has more.
A dozen years ago, Oregon was the first state in the nation to pass a state tribal government-to-government relations law. The law emphasizes the critical importance of establishing and maintaining the variety of ways that tribal and state governments learn from each other's structures, policies, traditions, and history. Louis Pitt Jr. is the Governmental Affairs and Planning Director for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. He says the relationship helps inform both tribal and state decision makers, as well as provide an opportunity to exchange relevant information and work together on shared interests.
We look at it as they're in our district. Within those areas, we feel we have a reason to be able to educate them how we want them to treat our people that are within their districts. How do we get the services to them in a fair way?
This week's event included presentations by various tribes and was highlighted by Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber's signing of a proclamation kicking off American Indian Week. For National Native News, I'm William Robbins.
The Pueblo of Zuni in New Mexico broke ground this week on a series of homes financed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's believed to be the first housing program of its kind in a tribal community. KUNM's Tristan Autone reports.
The self-help housing program works like this. The USDA gives your community a grant to finance housing, delivers supplies to build a home, provides blueprints, then, with the help of technical volunteers, oversees community members build their own homes. Terry Bruner is State Director for Rural Development at the USDA. He says the program will help Zuni Pueblo continue growing.
You've got a lot of traditional homes around the center of the Pueblo. There was an old housing development that had been built a couple decades ago, and people are looking for new homes. And the Zuni Pueblo is very passionate about having people return to the Pueblo, learn the language, become a part of the community. And part of the way you do that is make sure that there's good housing opportunities.
The Pueblo expects to grow the development to around 150 homes over the coming years. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A lawsuit filed by 7 northern Wisconsin tribes to let them hunt deer at night will go to trial this summer in federal court. Mike Simonson reports.
Hunting deer at night is a contentious issue, one that neither officials from the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission or the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources will publicly talk about. The tribes contend night deer hunting, not shining to attract deer, but using light once a deer is spotted to shoot it, is important to put food on the table of tribal members. And since the state allows night wolf hunting, then tribes should be able to hunt deer after dark in the ceded territories. The state argues night deer hunting is illegal because it is shining and dangerous. Both sides say negotiations have been ongoing since U.S. District Court Judge Barbara Crabb ruled last December that the tribes overstepped their authority by ordering a night deer hunt without consulting the state first. Perhaps the biggest underlying issue is treaty rights for Ojibwe to hunt, fish, and gather in the ceded territories. That right comes from 19th century treaties ceding much of their territory to the federal government. The state's point, they can't order a night hunt without the state's consent. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson in Superior, Wisconsin.
The Cherokee Immersion Charter School in Oklahoma is set to graduate its second group of fluent Cherokee-speaking children next week. The Cherokee Nation School will graduate its sixth grade class Monday. Principal Holly Davis says each year the school is making history by helping save the language. The school serves more than 100 students. The first graduating class was 10 students in 2012. During this month in 2008, several American Indians who were among the original signers of the Dawes Rule were honored at the state capitol in Oklahoma. Tribal and state leaders recognized eight people who at the time were believed to be the last living signees. More than 100,000 names are on the rolls, which was used for membership and land allotment in the late 1800s and early 1900s. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOU News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first two guests are here from the University of Alaska Southeast. You will, of course, recognize Katie Bosler's voice when she first speaks into the microphone.
Good afternoon, Pat.
There you go. And Sarah Arnson is with her. She's one of the academic advisors.
Hi there.
Hiya. So you're coming up on UAS Enrollment Day. You've got summer classes getting started, and Community Day is coming up on the 18th, right?
Yes, yeah.
We have a lot to talk about today.
Well, it's just a whole new world out at UAS, you know. Yeah. Commencement was very successful and wonderful and uplifting, wouldn't you say, Sarah?
Yeah.
I think so, yes, on Sunday. And so now here we are, a different kind of excitement, and we have enrollment days throughout the summer that Sarah, our academic advisor who's with me here today, will be telling us more about. We also have a lot of cool classes that start May 20th, so there's still time to register, and I can talk a little bit about that. And then also, of course, is an event that a lot of people in the community look forward to, and that is the annual End of Jazz and Classics Community Day on Campus, which is a week from tomorrow, the 18th of May.
That's every year this is the way Jazz and Classics ends, is with a big major blowout up on the campus.
Yeah.
And if we get good weather, which is conceivable, then it'll all be all over the campus in the outdoor areas.
Well, we sure hope so, because we have a new feature for Community Day on Campus this year. And thanks to our student activities director, Tara Olson, we have a dunk tank.
Ah, okay.
And Sarah and I can attest.
Yeah.
Another Sarah who's here with me here, Sarah Arnson, can attest to we were dunked for the end of the semester picnic when it was snowing.
Yeah, it was cold.
And I think it kind of took this concept of polar plunge to a whole new level.
Voluntary.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was ice cream headache after a few dunks, and you know, I think it was sort of more of an endurance contest than anything else.
So this is with baseballs, right?
I think they're tennis balls, but it's a pretty cool setup, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we're hoping for a sunny day, and we are looking for volunteers.
Is John in town?
Well, that's a good question. Now, John P. he probably will be in town. I know it's a favorite event of his, but I think he might have. I don't know. He got dunked.
You still have
up.
Those handcuffs that were in your office a couple of years ago?
No, I don't think he has those anymore. Okay. Yeah. But we'll also have, I think the advisors are going to have a duck racing booth.
Yes, we are. We're going to have a duck race with rubber ducks and squirt guns. So that should be entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And music. And are you having the barbecue?
I think there's going to be some food out there. There's
going to
be some vendors with food. There'll be cotton candy. But I'll have more information, or someone will have more information about the specifics.
You kind of concentrate on that next Friday when we have
Community Day next week here on a Juneau Afternoon. But Sarah is here to tell us about an event a couple days before Community Day, and that is Enrollment Day, the second one of the lineup for this summer.
And this is really important for students who are starting in the fall, because classes do fill out at UAS, so you want to be on your best game here to get in. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Enrollment Day is coming up on Thursday, May 16th. It's from 11 to 5 on the Ock Bay campus. And it's a really great way to come and take care of everything that you need to take care of to get enrolled for the fall semester all in one place. All of the student services kind of gather in the Learning Center on campus so that it's really easy for anybody to come out and get everything taken care of, from their placement test to advising to registering to getting their student ID card. So it's a really efficient way to come and get everything done. It's a nice way, if you're not really sure where to start, to come and just, you know, we'll direct you to what you need to do first. It's kind of fun. We usually have food. Again, if it's a sunny day, it's more fun. We have part of it outside. It would be a really great idea for high school seniors who are graduating to start thinking about what they're going to do in the fall. I know it seems like a long ways away, but classes are already filling up. So we will have 3 more enrollment days after this one this summer, but the sooner that you come in, the more likely you are to be able to get into the classes that you want before they fill up.
Because of the size of UAS, it's conceivable that if you are an incoming freshman, for instance, and you need certain courses in order to satisfy your first year, that if you don't get signed up for those on time, then that section may just not be available. So then you have to mess your schedule around and change an off-campus job or something like that. So it's really critical to get in on this early. And the other nice thing is, I think, what, about 5 years ago, they rearranged the enrollment process on the campus so that it's a one-stop shop now. You just go into one room, basically, and everything is there, all the way from register for classes to sort out your financial aid, and it's all just all one big long circular or semicircular counter that you can do it all in one set.
Yeah, and another advantage of enrollment day is that UAS now has mandatory academic advising for all incoming students, so it's a really great way to be able to access an advisor and get everything done without having to wait to make an appointment or wait to come and see us. We're just right there sitting there, you know, serving whoever shows up first. So it's a good way to get in and see your advisor and take care of that early. If students are thinking about coming, you can pre-register online. The website is www.uas.alaska.edu/enrollment-day, and there's a pre-registration form. You don't have to pre-register, but it's a good idea. It helps us kind of have an idea of who's coming and so that we can prepare for you if you're a biology major, for example.
When you say prepare, can you talk a little bit about what the advisor helps the student with?
Sure. Well, that's kind of a hard question, actually. Advisors help you with everything about everything is one way to put it. So, you know, one of the things that we do is to help you put together a schedule, but we also help talk about all the different factors that play into, you know, your success as a student. So are you going to be working? Do you have a family? Are you coming in maybe a little bit lower in math or English, and how is that going to affect you overall with your goals and your degree? So advisors are a really good first point of contact because we can help, you know, sort of gather all of those things together and point you in the right direction and get you connected with good resources.
Plus, it's a friendly crowd. That's the really nice thing.
Yes,
one of the nicest things about the advisory office is all of the folks in there are really kind of service, you know, service trained, service oriented, and they go out of their way to help folks out who are kind of new to the campus situation and like
that. Well, it's a wonderful aspect of UAS is that, you know, if you're interested in going to university and don't know where to start, you know, you can make an appointment with an academic advisor and they can really be your guide, a real live human being.
Absolutely.
What
sure
a concept.
Recommend it. Yeah. I remember I went to Washington State University back in the 60s, and when I first arrived at that campus, I was completely lost. I had no clue. I was this kid from Anchorage, Alaska, and the only person on the whole campus I knew was the band director, and he wasn't an academic advisor. So I drifted. But it sounds like we've really solved a lot of those problems now that an incoming student's got an oar to grab and somebody to pull them into the life raft. So summer classes.
Summer classes are
not
starting.
Not much time, but
real soon. Folks, if you haven't picked one up already, we do have our beautiful class schedule for summer 2013. Some of them are sort of lying around cafes and libraries and wherever you get a Capital City Weekly. And classes do start May 20th, but there's some kind of cool stuff. We have, I guess, now the annual Northwest Coast Art classes with Dolores Churchill and Kay Parker and Janice Criswell. Also, Jeremy Kane, our ceramics professor, is out there in the summer with some fantastic ceramics and firing methods course. That starts actually June 10th and goes to July 3rd. It's every day, so that's kind of an intensive. Also, there's a really cool class, it looks like, on Lincoln being taught by our sociology professor, David Noon. And Alaska on Film with Dr. Kevin Meyer, our assistant professor of English, sounds like a nice class to get more familiar with Alaska film. And also, of course, these fulfill different academic requirements for history and English. And those are the kind of the fun ones, but there's also, you know, just your basic classes in every, just in several of the degree programs that we offer at UAS. And summer's on, and we're hoping people will register by May 16th, but there may be a little bit of leeway there. Again, classes start May 20th for the summer semester. And also, as Sarah mentioned, and you mentioned, classes are filling up for the fall, so you can register online for fall or make an appointment with an advisor to get some help on how just to do that. And if you want to look on the online schedule, you just go to our website, uas.alaska.edu/schedule.
Well, one more time, Thursday, May 16th is UAS Enrollment Day. Go on the website, pre-register if you can, because it really helps them kind of get set for you.
11 to 5 at the Learning Center.
Okay.
On the Elk Lake campus.
Okay. Thank you much. Sarah Arnson, Katie Bosler, thank you for coming down. Thanks for all the information.
Thank you, Pat.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 10th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Mother Maybelle Carter, born in Copper Creek, Virginia, 1909. When she was 18 years old, she and her sister Sarah and her brother-in-law A.P. Carter cut an audition record at a little studio in Bristol, Tennessee, for RCA Victor Records. The Carter family, which gave us Wabash Cannonball, Wildwood Flower, and Will the Circle Be Unbroken. It's the birthday of Fred Astaire, born in Omaha, 1899. Went to New York with his sister Adele. They danced in a series of hit musicals on the Broadway and London stage, and then she went off to marry Lord Charles Cavendish. And Fred went to Hollywood for a screen test, where a Paramount executive wrote about him, "Can't act, can't sing, balding, can dance a little." It was on this day, 1749, the 10th and final volume of Henry Fielding's novel, The History of Tom Jones, A Foundling, was published. The novel was still a very new form in English. Other fiction writers tried to fob off their work as factual or as some kind of moral allegory. Fielding only wanted to write a good story. Tom Jones, the story of Tom, who's dropped on the doorstep of Squire Allworthy as a newborn, raised by the squire as his son, a generous young man who loves women, gets into all sorts of sexual adventures, falls for the neighboring squire's daughter, Sophia, but neither Sophia's father nor his own adopted father will sanction their marriage because Tom is illegitimate. Tom gets friendly with some local girls. He gets kicked out of his household, moves to London. Sophia wants to marry Tom, but she's all set to marry Squire Allworthy's nephew, and then she runs off and follows Tom to London and finds him. Here's a poem for today by Louisa Fletcher, The Land of Beginning Again. I wish that there were some wonderful place in the land of beginning again, where all our mistakes and all our heartaches and all of our poor, selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never put on again. I wish we could come on it all unaware, like the hunter who finds a lost trail, and I wish that the one whom our blindness had done the greatest injustice of all could be there, at the gates, like an old friend that waits for the comrade he's gladdest to hail. We would find all the things we intended to do but forgot and remembered too late, little praises unspoken, little promises broken, and all the thousand and one little duties neglected that might have perfected the day for one less fortunate. It wouldn't be possible not to be kind in the land of beginning again, and the ones we misjudged and the ones whom we grudged their moments of victory here would find in the grasp of our loving hand clasp more than penitent lips could explain. So I wish that there were some wonderful place called the land of beginning again, where all our mistakes and all our heartaches and all of our poor selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never put on again. A poem by Louisa Fletcher, The Land of Beginning Again, from her collection, The Land of Beginning Again, published by Nauvoo Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
There's a Mother's Day celebration. It's the 4th annual Mad Hatter Tea Party and Silent Auction run by the Douglas Community United Methodist Women. It's on Saturday, May 11th, tomorrow, beginning at 1 p.m. sharp, so don't be late like the White Rabbit. The event will feature afternoon tea with hors d'oeuvre, fancy desserts, a silent auction, and a hat parade. Please wear your tea attire and your maddest hat. Prizes for top hats and door prizes will be awarded. Tickets are $15 for all ages, with children 5 and under free. Space is limited. Tickets need to be purchased in advance. Call Claudette Curtis at 364-3195, 364-3195, or the church at 364-2408. The Mother's Day 4th Annual Mad Hatter Tea Party and Silent Auction.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
Surprise of my life. My clothes were packed at the front door. In the living room sat my wife. She looked at me with cold eyes. Tears was running down her face. Underneath those warm tears, I heard a song, baby boy, say, points out the points. She said, I'm tired of these excessive headaches. You make too many midnight joints. Too many nights you left me. And I suffered. I sat alone. In the time I needed your love, you was laying in another woman's arms. Thank you.
say this cold treatment killed my love. That ain't all I can do. She said to turn your back on me. Alone I had to go through the bed of hell. But I ain't gonna hold it against you, Eddie. When I pray, I wish you well.
You know who that is. That's Little Ed and the Blues Imperials. And Little Ed is right with us here. We're going to turn him down, and we'll call back for some music at the end of this whole thing. Little Ed is one of the guests that is making the Juno Jazz and Classics the huge, monstrous success that it is. You got a big concert coming on tonight, right? 8 o'clock?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Well, welcome to Juno.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, have you been here before?
No, I think I come here years ago, way back in, I think it was in the 90s, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was, we was at another part of it.
That was several Grammys ago.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Anyway, Little Ed's wife, Pamela's here in the concert, in the studio with us, but she said she's going to maintain a cloak of silence. She'll laugh sooner or later. I'll make her laugh.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I'll leave you up there.
Anyway, so the band's up here. You got all three of you. Pookie's bassist, guitarist Mike Garrett, and Kelly Littleton?
Yes.
All three? Yeah. Cool. So you guys have got a terrific range. You go all across Chicago and then something slow like what we just heard here and everything from drive you crazy beat to kind of settle it back and make everybody kind of recognize their blues inside them.
Yeah, we try to keep it mixed up, you know. It's fun to... I don't have a set list, so I just go off the top of my head and I try to feel the audience, you know. And I can just about tell what they like and what they want to hear.
And the cool thing about what you just said about going off the top of your head is that you guys have been together so long that all you probably have to do is hit a chord, and the other three guys are already on the tune, right?
Yeah, they pretty much know where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I slip something new on them, you know, and just to see how they're going to react to it. And they, but they kind of fills it in. They kind of knows what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So you guys started out basically playing little teeny clubs and all that sort of stuff, and then this guy that ran Alligator Records,
Bruce Iglauer.
Yeah, he kind of discovered you.
Yeah, he did. He came into a club one night when I was playing. My first rhythm player, his name is Dave Well. He knew about Bruce. I didn't. And he would say, "Oh man, Bruce Iglauer was in the house tonight. You know, mm-hmm. We got to play our best." And I go, "Who is that? You know, I don't know who that is." And so he came up and introduced himself to me, and he says to me, "You know, I want you to come down to my studio." He introduced himself, said he was the head of Alligator Records, and he wanted to do a couple of songs for an anthology album.
Now, the story is, it's got to be made up by the marketing department, but what it said when I was reading about your band was that you guys had never been into a recording studio before,
so you played
it like a club date.
We hadn't.
Yeah.
I had never been in a studio. It was my wish to actually cut a 45 at that time, because you could go into a booth in Chicago.
That, for some of our listeners, that's a 45 RPM record. It's about 7 inches in diameter. Got a big hole in the middle. It grooves.
Yeah,
play the music. Okay.
Yeah. So you could go into this booth. All you had to do was bring a tape of your music, and they'd put your music in, and you just sing to it. And that's what
thought you were going to be doing, right?
Yeah, that's what me and my brother was going to try to do. You know, we was going to try to do this to make this 45, but it was $100 to do it at the time. So back then, $100 was pretty, good piece of money.
Yeah, you guys split $6 for your first date, right?
Yeah.
The four of you?
Yeah. We went into the studio, and I had never been in the studio, and to put the headphones on and to hear myself really clearly, and it really beefed me up a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I started to play it just like I'd play a club, you know? Walking, tiptoeing on my toes.
They weren't expecting that.
No, they wasn't.
No.
They wasn't expecting it. And then he had all the workers in the back window, you know? And every time I'd finish a song, people would clap and holler, more, do another, you know?
So you guys wound up doing what, 3 hours?
We did 30 songs in 3 hours.
In 3 hours.
Yeah.
And, like just a couple of retakes, and basically that was the peak.
I don't even think we did a retake on that one.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so when the album comes out, now that's Jumpstart, right? Was that the first? No.
The first one was Roughhousin'.
Roughhousin', yeah. Okay, so the album comes out as Roughhousin', and it kind of takes a while before it takes off, but when it takes off, then suddenly you guys are known nationally.
Yeah, because I was still working at the car wash at the time.
Yeah.
And we started to do a little tours here and there, and then all of a sudden Bruce had this big tour for me, you know, going to New York and Boston mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And
now, was the whole band together by then, all four of you?
No, I had Dave Will on guitar and Lewis Henderson on drums.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So
my brother was with me.
Right.
James Poole Young.
Yeah. So then from there you start touring.
Yes.
And of course the guy who wants you to do another album.
Right.
So you guys go in the studio again and lay out another album, and it's like. I guess what I'm trying to get at, what did that feel like? I mean, you're working in a car wash and you're hearing yourself on the radio and you're thinking,
well, you
that's
know,
weird.
after we did the first album, you know, I talked to my boss at the car wash because I was traveling more than I was actually working at the car wash.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't want to quit the car wash, but, and I thank my boss at the car wash for this. His name was George Levy. I came to him and I said, well, you know, I'm going on another tour. And he said, well, you know, you're more on the road than you is here. So why don't you try it out for like a month? And if you don't like it, come on back. You know, you'll still have your job, you know. So that's what actually got me on the road, you know.
So a string of concerts that basically were put on by the record company that took you all over the country and then back in and finally the Chicago Blues Festival.
Yes.
About 100,000 people.
Yes, that was a biggie for me. Actually, my band didn't play with me. I had a backup band at the time.
Exactly.
To walk out on that stage and see all those people, as big as the Blues Festival stage is, I felt like I was the only person up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And just the adrenaline kicked in, you know, and I had a ball, you know.
What? That's got to be like an amazing feeling to
it was. Yeah. I mean, to see all these people jumping up, hollering and screaming and dancing and having a good time,
yeah.
it made me know that's what I wanted to do.
Oh, well, by then you were already doing it. So
Yeah.
So, Alaska, have you guys done any of the little sets around town yet? Have you played for any of the Juno audiences?
Not here.
I'll tell you something. You're going to be surprised tonight.
Really?
This town loves music.
That's
good. You are going to be amazed at how warmly you will be received, because we know how to make a performer and a band welcome.
Well, that's good.
So you're gonna find some people out there who will start dancing before you get through your first slide. So, you play slide guitar.
Yes, I do.
Can you talk about how that? First of all, how does the instrument work? Are you running a bar somehow on the slide?
Yeah, you got a little metal tube you put on your finger.
Okay.
And you shimmy it. I learned that from my uncle, J.B. Huddle. He was a slide master. And I remember seeing him play for the family. And back then, you know, they didn't allow the kids to interact with the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'd be in our own room, and the grown-ups would be in their own room, and JB would be in there playing and singing.
And you'd be sneaking out the door.
To see my aunts and, uncles react to the music was really exciting.
Yeah.
You know, we'd peep in, you know, much as we could.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And all I could see was this little shiny thing on his finger, you know, shimmering. You know, because the lights back then was 40 watts. We didn't have 100-watt bulbs in the house. So it was kind of dim, you know.
Yeah.
And I could see that slide shimmering. And then I slowly sneaked in and sneaked in till my auntie would run me out. And then JB would say, let the boy come in and listen to some music, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you start? When did you start fiddling around with the slide guitar?
I actually started around about 12 years old.
Yeah.
JB took me under his wing, and he said, you like this, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, why don't you learn this? But JB was smart. He taught me rhythm before I learned lead. And I think he knew that I was going to do it this way because he taught me rhythm, Elmo James rhythm, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when he left and went out of town, I would show the rhythm to my brother, Pookie, and then I would learn how to, I would try to slide with it while Pookie was playing the rhythm. So I think JB knew that that was going to happen. So that's how
he... And you had your dad's sounds inside your head, so that's what you're trying to come into, right?
Right, right. My uncle. JB was my uncle. Yeah. And I think about what he played, and then I learn how to slide it,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So the thing about the slide is it lets you come at a note from a distance.
Yes.
Which is what makes the music so exciting, because we all know where you're going to wind up, but how you're going to get there is always the
yeah.
sort of, yeah, let's go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you start back on the neck of the guitar, and you just slide down to the note.
Yeah.
And once you get the note, then you make it tremble, you know, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's what got me, because JB used to do that, and he's, you know, JB was called the slide winder because his techniques, he'd slide down the neck and then he'd shimmy and bring it back.
Yeah.
I consider myself as a slide slinger because I slide down and I go even further. You know.
Yeah. This is going to be an amazing, amazing concert. And it's at 8 o'clock tonight. It's at Centennial Hall. It's probably real close to a sellout because everything with jazz and classics sells out. And then you're on the cruise. I won't even mention that because I know those tickets went months ago. But anyway, I'm sure glad you came to Juneau, and I'm sure glad we're going to hear this sound of yours.
It's, all right.
It's going to be an amazing night. Let's do some more of it, shall we?
Okay.
All right.
I like everything.
and the Imperials, we made a mistake. They're actually playing at the A&B Hall tonight for their concert at 8 o'clock. So it's about 18 minutes before 4 o'clock, and in my studio right now are the puppet masters and mistresses. The people are here from a company called Leica. And if you don't know who Leica is, if you remember back to a few years back when all of a sudden this cartoon show, which you could forget completely was a cartoon while you were watching it, called Coraline, suddenly appeared, and there was a new dimension to film animation. So with me are Georgina Hayes, the creative supervisor, Vera Bruskell, the story artist, and Jeremy Spake, who is the armature specialist, and I'll have to find out exactly what that works out to in a moment or two here. But you folks are, you also have Paranorman currently streaming on Netflix, and Box Trolls is coming out next year.
Absolutely.
And these are all dark cartoons that are not your mother's cartoon show.
Well, Box Trolls is aimed at a sort of a wider audience. It won't be as dark. Still has a darkness, still has the Leica stamp, but the Box Trolls...
This is Georgina speaking.
Yeah. the Box Trolls themselves are a little lighter than anything we've done before, and it has a good sort of comedy sort of aspect to it as well.
Gee, I don't know if I'm in favor. I mean, the others were so incredibly cool because,
you know, don't worry, because we've got some cool villains. So there's a good mix in this one.
Okay, because your brains are twisted in the way that this makes it really enjoyable to watch this. What's an armature specialist?
The armature is the metal structure on the inside of the puppet that holds it up and allows it to animate. It's basically the skeleton of the puppet. It's hinge joints, ball and socket joints, little swivel joints, and we just build them so that the animators can get the performance that they need. And
where's your degree in engineering from?
My degree was in graphic design.
Along the way you became an engineer in order to be able to pull this
exactly.
off.
Exactly. Like, there's so many people in stop motion that come from, you know, everything that you can think of from backgrounds, art school, English majors, you name it. Like, it's just some people are drawn to it, and they end up doing it.
You toss that word stop motion off as though it were an easy thing to do. Having done a little bit of it, I can tell you right now it's not. So can you describe the process a little bit?
In stop motion animation, and anyone else wants to chime in, you can. The essential thing is that you're moving something in tiny increments, 24 frames per second. And when it's played back on film or digitally nowadays, you have the perception of the thing coming to life and moving in front of you. So, you know, you can do that as simply as moving a rock across a table, or you can do it as, you know, in-depth as Coraline or Paranorman, where you have incredible things coming to life literally in front of you.
So, story artist. Vera, I guess my question is, how does it differ writing for this as opposed to writing for live actors?
Right into the mic. Yeah. My department actually doesn't write the script. We start with the script, or we work with the director to develop one, but we actually figure out the visual language of the movie. Because it's such a complicated process to make these things, you have to make the puppet, you have to build the set. Everything on camera is made. Cool. It's a lot of money. So they make us draw it first and make sure it works as a drawing.
So the scripts that come to you, were they written with the idea that they would be stop animation, or are they written with the idea that it would be a movie and then you turn it into stop animation?
It depends. Coraline was a script written by Henry Selick, who's the director, but it started off as a children's book by Neil Gaiman that Henry adapted into a script. And Paranorman, it was an original idea by Chris Butler, who was also a story artist. And he just wrote it, and we worked with him to figure that out.
Yeah. And the creative supervisor, do you have a whip and a chair, or what are your tools?
So I'm the creative supervisor of the puppet fabrication department. So my job is really supervising a crew of 60 people to make sort of a cast of puppets of generally between 120 and 200 puppets per movie. So, you know, it's my background is in making puppets. I've made puppets myself for stop motion, for television and film for like 20 years before I came here. But then now my job is to get the best people in the world together and make as efficiently and as beautifully as possible the puppets for the Leica feature films.
Yeah. Yeah, and a real challenge.
It's a great challenge, you know, and I was able to start at Leica when it started as a feature film company, so I've built the team from scratch, and yeah.
Now, after Coraline came out, you got nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes, we did, yeah.
Leica is in, you're located in Hillsboro, Oregon. Right.
So we are.
When you went down to Hollywood to attend the Academy Awards, did people want to know if they could spend American money if they came to visit you? Or
you know, we personally didn't get to go to the Academy Awards, but yeah, it was a shame. I mean, there's so few places at the Academy, but Travis Knight, who is the CEO of the company, and the directors go down. And I think we are a little bit of an anomaly in the Hollywood world, but I think they like us for that as well. You know, we're the underdogs, and we're making beautiful movies, so we're respected.
But your company's been there twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. We hope to go again.
I hope you do too. So now, what are you doing in town? You're doing two things, as I understand it. Pat Race is here. He's
That's probably
kind of
where I'll jump in.
So
we're doing several things. We actually just got back from Thunder Mountain High School, which was great fun. We did a little presentation out there. But we're going to be hanging out over at our gallery, the Alaska Robotics Gallery, from about 4:30 to 6. And then there's a lecture tonight at the downtown library at 7:30, and that's going to be really great. We kind of did our test run at the high school, and it's full of pictures and animation and information. And if you're an artist or storyteller of any kind, I think you'd really get a lot out of it. Tomorrow we're having a workshop where people can actually build their own puppets and animate them. And that's going to be a 4-hour workshop at the Douglas Library. There are limited spaces, and I believe there are still some available. You have to check on the library website about that.
Is there a charge for any of these?
The only thing that has a charge is the workshop, and it's a $10 materials fee, so pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and I think I saw the notice that it's pay as you can. So
if someone can't pay the $10, then
we're not going to discourage artists.
We're not going to turn anyone away. Yeah.
And the time again at the library, the workshop.
The workshop is tomorrow from 1 to 5.
Do you happen to know who you contact or just call the library?
Actually, you can contact my mother. Carol Race is. I don't remember her email address off the top of my head, but I think it's Carol R at Juno something or other. So go to the library website.
Website. And reserve a space because it is limited to how many people?
It's limited to 20 people.
Ooh,
and
so
it's just limited by materials.
Folks,
so
you want to be on the web right now making a reservation if this is of interest to you. Yeah. Well, wonderful. And I'm really glad to meet you. And congratulations on two trips to the Academy Awards.
Thank you.
And I hope for one for what's the next film? It's called Box Trolls, right?
Yes.
And that's coming out in
2014.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for doing the workshop because I think a lot of people are going to benefit from it.
Yeah, thank you, Juno, for inviting us.
Every time you look at me, I'm as helpless as can be. I become a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. All you do is touch my hand, and your wish is my command. I become a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. If you really love me, darling, please be kind. I offer you the truest love that you will ever find. Take my heart and please be fair, and live with loving care. For I'm just a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. If you really love me, darling, please be kind. I offer you the truest love that you will ever find. Take my heart and please be fair. Handle it with love and care. For I'm just a puppet on a string, and you can do most anything with me.
As Alaskans, we face important choices about how we produce and consume energy that runs our homes and businesses. The Renewable Energy Alaska Project is committed to promoting energy efficiency and educating the public of the benefits of stably priced, clean, and local renewable energy. More information at realaska.org. This message brought to you by REAP, your voice for renewable energy.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
7 minutes to four, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to tell us about a really vital meeting and discussion that's coming up. It's called the Restorative Justice and Criminal Disabilities Community Discussion. It'll be Monday at 7 p.m. at Northern Light Church. And K.J. Metcalf and, I should have written your name down.
Leslie Carter.
Leslie Carter is here, and the two of them are going to tell us a little bit about this really interesting discussion.
Well, this is the second in a series. About three, 4 weeks ago, we had a panel by Justice Carpinetti, and that was really very revealing. We had a couple of ex-offenders that spoke, and we have some huge issues in Alaska. Alaska, again, has one of the higher rates of incarceration per capita, and the United States has the highest rate in the world. So we're looking at incredible amounts of money and human suffering and the lack of healing. And one of the ex-offender said that going into jail was the worst thing that ever happened. He said, you just can't come out a very good person. It is so terrible. So we want to have this discussion Monday that kind of looks at a different model. And Leslie comes from Canada and can talk about restorative justice that she's been involved with and familiar with. So let you do that, Leslie.
Okay, so you're from the Yukon,
I'm
right?
From Whitehorse, Yukon, yes. And similar to Alaska, Yukon as well as Nunavut and Northwest Territories have the highest rates of violent victimization in our country. So we're very familiar with the harm that's done when people do violent acts to each other. We also have high rates of incarceration. What we have that you may not have here is an emerging system of restorative justice. And Aboriginal people would say it's not emerging, it's been around forever. It's a traditional way to address the harm that's done, and it is a way to involve not just the offender and the lawyers, it also involves the victim and the family and the community in addressing and repairing the harm that is done when a person does an act of either violence or injustice to another person.
So can you describe, for instance, how this would actually work?
Yes. Canada has a couple of things that I don't believe you have in the States. Our criminal code actually acknowledges special conditions around Aboriginal offenders. So there are opportunities right in the courtroom to bring to light some of the facts of some of the very hard lives that people who grew up in Aboriginal communities come in. And those facts must be considered in sentencing. So right from the get-go, even in a courtroom, there is the opportunity to have a particular person's hard history brought before. It's not an excuse, it's an explanation. And what it does inform is a better type of sentence. It doesn't mean there's no jail, but it might mean that there are better programs, there are better supports. We also have something called the Aboriginal Justice Strategy in Canada, and then the Yukon that translates into a series of community justice committees. Now, in Yukon, they're all run by First Nations. They are able to hire usually part-time people. They're usually overseen by a group of community people. It can be people who've been harmed. It can be elders. It can be family members. Each community decides that. And they have the opportunity to look at alternatives to sentencing. And they can get referrals from the police or from the prosecution. And then in a circle, people decide what is the appropriate response to the particular act that's happened.
KJ, you also have another speaker, Vance Sanders.
That's right. And he is a local attorney, and he's extremely interested in how we, as a policy, criminalize disabilities. And people end up with substantial amount of jail time because of a disability. And there has to be some alternative strategies to take care of people. For instance, people with brain disability could be caused by their mother drinking or traumatic brain injury or a number of things. And those conditions are rarely ever considered in sentencing, and those like a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder person who has that disability has trouble learning from consequences and remembering, and they do the same thing time and time and time again. I think last time I was on and talked about this, I talked about a 35-year-old man who's been arrested 45 times, and I just got a call that he was just rearrested. And the, I guess the thing is that there's no alternative.
No.
I mean, he has to go to jail. He broke the law, and he has to go to jail. And we don't have those programs in place. We don't have the housing in place. Keith Levy, Judge Levy, said in the first panel that we had, and someone said, what do we do? And he said, build houses.
Yeah.
And we have some examples that we'll talk about on Monday night about what the Yukon is trying to do in that regard.
Well, we need to join in this discussion. This is an amazing process that you've touched off here. So this is Monday night, May 13th. It's at 7 p.m. at Northern Lights United Church. It's sponsored jointly by Northern Light United Church and by Juno People for Peace and Justice. 586-6738 if you want further information.
Correct.
But just show up at Northern Light United Church Monday night at 7 and join in this discussion because it's really vital to our community. Thank you so much for coming and telling us about it. Concert coming up Monday night following the Juno Jazz and Classics Week with the piano player that you're listening to in the background, Richard Dowling. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We're also on translators, K276 AF in the Valley and Auk Bay at 103.1, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7, Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1, K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9, and K210 AS serves the Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait at 89.9 megahertz. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.